7. I was wearing rubber thongs, and since saloon bars all over Alice posted notices reading "No Thongs," with a view to discouraging abos, we went to the public bar of the Fraser Arms. Alice is not a very cheerful town, either by day or night. Old-timers can remember Todd Street in the days of horses and hitching posts. It has since become a dreary, Americanized strip of travel agents, souvenir shops and soda fountains. One shop was selling stuffed koala bear dolls and T-shirts with Alice Springs written in flies. In the newsagents, they were selling copies of a book called Red Over White. Its author, a former Marxist, insisted that the Aboriginal land rights movement was a front for Soviet expansion in Australia. "Which makes me," said Arcady, "one of the leading suspects." Outside the pub, there was an off-license, and the boys we saw earlier were lurching round it. In the middle of the street, a battered eucalyptus reared its trunk up through the asphalt. "Sacred tree," he said, "sacred to the caterpillar dreaming and a dangerous traffic hazard." Inside, the public bar was noisy and crowded with blacks and whites. The 7-foot barman was supposed to be the best bouncer in town. There were puddles of beer on the linoleum, wine-red curtains in the windows, and a disorder of fiberglass chairs. An obese, bearded Aboriginal sat scratching the bites on his belly and had set a buttock on each of 2 bar stools. An angular woman sat beside him. There was a beer mat stuck into her purple knitted cap. Her eyes were closed, and she was giggling hysterically.
"The gang's all here," said Arcady.
"Who?"
"My mates from the Pintupi Council. Come on, let me introduce you to the chairman."
We bought our beers and threaded through the drinkers to where the chairman, in a booming voice, was haranguing a knot of admirers. He was a huge, very dark-skinned man in jeans, a black leather jacket, black leather hat, and a studded knuckle dust around his wrist. He extended a smile full of teeth, locked my hand in a fraternal handshake, and said,
"Man!"
I said, "Man," back, and watched the pink tip of my thumb poking up out of his fist.
"Man," he said.
"Man," I said.
"Man," he said.
I said nothing. I felt that if I said "man" a third time, we'd go on saying "man" indefinitely. I looked away. The pressure of his grip decreased, and in the end I got my crushed hand free. The chairman went on telling the story he'd interrupted for my benefit, about his habit of shooting the padlocks off cattle station gates. His listeners found this very amusing. I then tried talking to an urban activist up here on a visit from Sydney. Or rather, since he averted his face, I found myself talking to the Aboriginal flag dangling as an earring from his left lobe. To begin with, I got no reaction, other than the odd wobble of the flag. Then the face swivelled round and started speaking.
"Are you English?"
"Yes."
"Why don't you go back home?"
He spoke slowly in clipped syllables.
"I just arrived," I said. "I mean all of you."
"All of who?"
"White men," he said.
The whites had stolen his country, he said. Their presence in Australia was illegal. His people had never ceded 1 square inch of territory. They had never signed a treaty. All Europeans should go back where they came from.
"What about the Lebanese?" I asked. "They must go back to Lebanon."
"I see," I said. But the interview had come to an end, and the face swiveled back to its previous position. I next caught the eye of an attractive fair-haired woman and winked. She winked back, and we both sidled round the edge of the group.
"Having a hard time with the leader?" she whispered.
"No," I said. "Instructive." Her name was Marion. She had driven into town only 30 minutes earlier, from Walbiri country, where she was working on a women's land claim. She had level blue eyes and looked very innocent and happy in a skimpy flower-printed dress. There were crescents of red dirt under her fingernails, and the dust had given a smooth, bronze-like sheen to her skin. Her breasts were firm, and her arms were solid and cylindrical. She had slashed the sleeves of the dress to allow the air to circulate freely under her armpits. She and Arcady had been teachers at the same school in the bush. From the way she kept glancing at his blonde thatch, shining in the spotlight, I guessed they must once have been lovers. He was wearing a sky blue shirt and baggy fatigue pants. "How long have you known Arc?" she asked.
"All of 2 days," I said.
I mentioned the name of the girl we both knew in Adelaide. She lowered her eyelids and blushed.
"He's a bit of a saint," she said.
"I know it," I said. "A Russian saint."
I could have gone on talking to Marion, were it not for a grating voice at my left elbow.
"And what brings you to the territory?"
I looked round to see a wiry, prickle-mouthed wight in his 30s. His pumped-up biceps and sleeveless grey sweatshirt announced him as a gym bore. "Looking round," I said.
"Anything special?"
"I want to find out about the Aboriginal songlines."
"How long are you staying?"
"Couple of months, maybe."
"Are you attached to anybody?"
"My own."
"And what makes you think you can show up from merry old England and clean up on sacred knowledge?"
"I don't want to clean up on sacred knowledge. I want to know how a songline works."
"You're a writer?"
"Of sorts."
"Published?"
"Yes."
"Science fiction?"
"I hate science fiction."
"Look," said the gym boy, "you're wasting your time, mate. I've lived 10 years in the territory. I know these elders. They are not going to tell you anything."
His glass was empty. The one way to discourage this conversation was to buy the man a drink.
"Nah, thanks."
He lifted his chin.
"I'm all right."
I winked again at Marion, who was trying to suppress a fit of giggles. The other glasses were empty, so I offered to pay for a round. I went to the bar and gave orders for schooners and middies. I ordered for the gym bore whether he liked it or not. Arcady came over to help me with the glasses.
"I say," he grinned, "you are having fun."
I paid and we carried them over.
"Say when you want to get out of here," he whispered. "We can go over to my place."
"Ready when you are." The gym boy winced as he took the glass and said,
"Thank you, mate."
The chairman took his without a word. We drank up. Arcady kissed Marion on the lips and said,
"See you later."
The gym boy put his hand in mine and said,
"See you around, mate."
We went outside. "Who was that?" I asked.
"Bad news," said Arcady.
The town was quiet in the dusk. An orange rim smouldered along the line of the MacDonald Ranges.
"How did you like the Fraser Arms?" he asked.
"I liked it," I said. "It was friendly." It was friendlier anyway than the pub in Catherine.